Kia ora, hello, and my name is Kitty Fitton, and this is Ordinary Life on Coast Access Radio. And I am not a doctor or a health professional in any way, shape or form, but I've got lots of opinions. And I've had Parkinson's disease for the last 8 years. It was my anniversary, the other week, round about beginning of June. And that was quite strange. And there's also a milestone birthday fast approaching. Yes, I'm going to be 30. No. And with that in mind, I've invited the beautiful, lovely, amazing Steph Bradley to come talk to me today about healthy aging. So hello, Steph.
Hello, Kitty. How awesome to be here with you today.
And Steph, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh my goodness! Where do you start with when we get into our 40 somethings? How do we answer a question? Where do we begin? I'm a qualified occupational therapist, personal trainer, years and years and years of endurance exercise, but more recently have come to appreciate the importance of nutrition and how that impacts our aging.
Yeah, so, you wear lots of different hats, eh?
Yeah, there's lots of other things I do as well. You know, as well as being a mama and a partner and a, you know, all of those good things.
And you live in Kapiti?
Sure do.
Yeah. And what's your favourite thing about living on the coast?
Look, it has to be the access to the beach and the rivers and the walks and the good people. You know, it's a good size to have a beautiful community of people around you.
It's not bad, eh?
Oh, yeah. I love it.
And we met some time ago through a business networking group. And when I first met you, I was like, whoa. She's like so enthusiastic.
Oh, yeah, thanks, Kitty. I felt the same about you, actually.
Oh, well, we could just sit here and share the love.
We could. Yeah. We could blow smoke all day.
Oh, goodness me. But I suppose we'd best talk about. Yes, yeah, so I found that, as you know, I've got Parkinson's.
Yeah.
And it's not great. But one thing that's really good for me is exercise. And I talk about that a lot and people must go, she's talking about exercise again.
Again.
But I've been trying to learn to love exercise.
Beautiful.
Instead of hating it because I have to do it, I've been trying to find ways to enjoy it. So what tips, advice, things can you think of that might help people?
What a great question. Do you know, we get head over the head with the advice to exercise all the time. And sometimes we feel resistance coming up because we have this association with pain and exercise, you know, no pain, no gain.
Mm.
But I wholly believe that in order for exercise to be sustainable over a lifetime, it needs to be enjoyable. Like, we have to love our exercise.
Because you think about going to the gym, don't you, and stuff like that. And people go, oh, I hate the gym and I don't want to go with all those people, you know, busting weights and, oh, I'm going to pull a muscle. I mean, does it have to be like that?
Oh, my goodness me, no. You know, when we're talking about healthy aging, it's so important to prevent sarcopenia, which is the reduction of skeletal muscle mass over a lifetime. And it tends to happen for women, really from menopause onwards, we start to get an atrophy of the skeletal musculature. And for gentlemen, probably from about 60s. And that's,
wow. That's a very big word. Is that the thing that causes osteoporosis?
What causes osteoporosis? Well, there's lots of things that cause osteoporosis. But certainly, as you were saying, doing some strengthening exercises helps reduce the onset of any bone mass related disorders.
Yeah.
So that might be anything arthritic or osteoporosis or osteoarthritis, you know, anything like that.
Yeah.
Certainly doing exercise is really important to prevent anything related to bone mass. So strengthening is one of those things.
Yeah.
And we don't have to do strengthening in the gym. We can in our own living room do body weight exercises, and there's only a few exercises that we need to do a couple times a week, and that would be enough.
Wow, that's great. Because I mean, tell me if I'm going off piste, because it's about, you're the expert. But I read somewhere that, for example, walking, which we all know is meant to be really good for you. Sometimes I find it quite hard, but I do it anyway. everyone's fixated on 10,000 steps. And yet I read somewhere recently that actually that's like a made up figure and it's actually about 7,500.
Do you know, I think it's just about doing something.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do get fixated on 10,000 steps. And there was a piece of study that underpinned that at one point in time. But there's so much research. And at the end of the day, do something. Do more than you did last month. And then when you've got a regular habit of doing it, walking, which also improves your bone density, your muscle mass, your immunity, all of those good things. But when you've got a habit of doing it, then, you know, you might just add some hills or add a little bit of speed walking. Mm. You know, it's really just about sitting slightly outside of your comfort zone. And then when it gets to a point where it's part of your routine, then that's when it no longer becomes difficult.
And somebody told me that water walking is really good, going to the swimming pool and walking up and down in the swimming pool, because it's not very hard on your joints.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So it reduces the impact on your joints, but there is some benefit to having, you know, the when your foot strikes the ground, that also does improve the bone density. So it is important to have some jolting or some impact on your skeletal system to improve your bone density over time.
Wow, that's like, I didn't know that at all.
Yeah.
I do know I've been doing some stretching every morning, and it started off with a 28-day challenge thing that I saw, and I was doing that. And now I've added in weights and I'm doing a bit more. And my daughter came and she did the stretching exercise with me. And when I started, you know, the whole, you basically, it's radio, so you can't, I kind of have to explain it, I guess.
I can see what you're doing.
You have to sit up straight and you have to have your legs wide in front of you, and you're sat on the floor. And then you have to lean forward as far as you can. Now, when I first started, I was like, lean forward. Oh, that's good. That's a good one. I could just get my fingertips on the ground in front of me. And now I can get my whole hand down.
Amazing.
And I can lean forward quite a little bit.
Doesn't take long, does it, to improve your the length of your muscles?
About 8 months. But I mean... But it's there, and and that is what helps me keep going.
It helps us with our lives. Our, you know, when we reduce the length of our muscles and thereby our flexibility, there's less we do, and the less we do, the less we do, and we become, you know, on this negative cycle. So there's definitely, and also stretching, as we're talking about healthy aging, is really important for maintenance of posture, and that is critically important for longevity and health as well.
Yeah, because like people... I think it's the same for people who are getting older. I hate to admit this, but I couldn't put my socks on around Christmas.
I love that you're admitting that.
It was really...
A lot of people will resonate.
I really struggled. I couldn't get my foot up high enough, and my right leg, I could just... My left leg, there wasn't... And I would sit and I would cry, and, like, tights were, like, forget it. And then... And the other day, my partner said to me, wow, you just get up and get dressed now. You just put on your socks. You just do it without even thinking.
Wonderful.
And I can dry my feet after a shower.
And these things that a lot of people take for granted, but you know that just the smallest amount of function makes a massive impact on your life.
Yeah. But because I've got Parkinson's, a lot of people will say to me, people have said years ago even, oh, well, here's this gadget that will help you put your socks on without bending. And I just went, I don't want that. I don't want any of that stuff. You know, I want to be able to do it myself.
Totally agree with you.
And I think people mean well when they go, would you like me to pick that up for you? Or would you like me to walk? You know, I can go pick that up from the shops. And instead you have to go, no. I will do this.
You're exactly right. And I tell you what, also in another part of my life, I'm in real estate and have been for many years since the early 2000s. And when folk who were moving out of two-level homes and wanting to buy a single-level home because they're getting older, the occupational therapist in me used to want to say, No, please stay in your two-level home, because that's what's going to maintain your cardiovascular fitness, going up and down the stairs, your muscle strength in your legs, just by that incidental exercise, which helps keep us, you know, healthy. And, you know, if we look at Mediterranean European cultures, a lot of them are living in two-level homes well into their 90s or even hundreds, and it helps maintain their longevity.
Yeah, so I saw a program a while back, and it was talking about those Mediterranean. So it was the Mediterraneans, and they were walking. They just walk everywhere, and I know my fitness has improved since I said, right, what keeps you fit when you were a kid? Kids are always healthy. It's like, well, they walk everywhere. They ride their bikes. They don't have cars. They don't. Do you mean they just? Yeah. And I made a decision that I would walk more, or go, if I was going to the shops, I would try and walk there. And then invariably somebody comes and picks me up because they're worried about me. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. I can do it. I am slower than I used to be. I don't like that at all. But you've still got to try.
Yeah.
I think.
Absolutely. There was a significant piece of research completed by a gentleman called Dan Buettner. He was a National Geographic explorer, and he discovered that there were these blue zones around the world.
Have you heard that? That's what I was talking about. It was the stuff about the blue zones.
Yeah, and there are parts of the world.
Secrets of the blue zones. Yeah. That was the program. Yeah.
That's right. There are parts of the world where there is an inordinate number of centenarians, people who have lived beyond the age of 100. And they're not just living, they are thriving into their hundreds. And what they've discovered is that there are a handful of things that these communities have in common. And one of them is incidental exercise.
Yeah.
So they don't necessarily go to the gym every day and lift weights or, you know.
No.
They're just moving as a part of their lifestyle.
Yeah, they were walking up and down hills to visit people, and I saw one chap, and he's just sat on the floor cross-legged. I don't know if you saw it, and he said, oh, can you do this? And he just leaned over and put his head on the floor. And he was like, wow. And the other guy's going, no. And he's like, ha, 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 you're like younger than me and you can't do this.
Exactly. And what's exciting about it is that anyone can improve their flexibility, anyone can improve their posture, and anyone can improve their cardiovascular health.
And they still ate nice food, and they were all cooking together, weren't they? And
they still drank red wine.
They still drank red wine. But the amount of fun that they had, you know, I remember seeing an old, like, grandma, she kind of got up and was dancing with her granddaughters and stuff. It was like, whoa, that's so cool. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But what can you do if you don't live in a blue zone then? What tips do you have?
That's such a great question. I think it's about starting where you are for a start. It's starting where you are.
Yeah.
It's not saying, oh my goodness, you know, I know my health is deteriorating. Sometimes we get triggered by an event. Our doctor says something to us. We have a medical event and we feel like it's time.
Mm.
And what we need to do is take the most important thing and start there. And it really is just about, you know, you might just start with hydration. Just start with getting 6 to 8 glasses of water in every day, or, you know, having vegetables more than once a day.
Yeah.
You know, having vegetables at lunch and at dinner, and then eventually breakfast, lunch and dinner, and crowding out the other things. So it's just small steps that, because health isn't, health is a journey, not a destination. We should constantly be trying to improve our health, but not feel like we need to get there at any particular point in time.
I love that. Health is a journey and not a destination. Yeah, because I know for me it was a massive wake-up call. Finding it. I do rather cynically often say everybody needs a life-changing chronic illness, you know, an incurable disease, one that doesn't kill you. It really kind of opens your eyes.
Well, it creates a sense of urgency and a knowing, whereas we tend to take for granted our health until such time as we know that it's not limitless.
You always think you're going to be okay, and you always, you know, people are always saying, that's not going to happen to me. That's not going to happen to me. As you know, I work in insurance. Thrilling, exciting subject.
You make it exciting.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you. But people are always saying, that's not going to happen to me. I'm going to be okay. Or I'm really healthy. And you just sit there and you go, huh, tell me about it, buddy. So was I.
Yeah.
You know, things can and do happen. And at that point, you have to reevaluate and take stock and try and do something a bit more positive. Or, unfortunately, the flip side of that can be quite bleak.
Mm. Oh. But, and again, it's just where you are, finding one thing that you think would make an impact on your health for the long term. And I think also there's a tendency for us to want to make a change. We yank a lever, we try and make it overnight. You know, we clear out the pantry, say, right, no more sugar.
Mm.
And then we find it unsustainable because we've got this all or nothing mentality.
And it's a birthday or a party or it's the weekend and totally. You just really want, yeah.
And then we throw the towel in and suddenly we're eating a lot of sugar. So it's about saying, you know, if we focus on progress and not perfection, then ultimately we'll find our way to food freedom by noticing how it makes our body feel and making the changes for the right reasons.
That's awesome. I know my partner's wanting to stop eating. He said he wanted to stop eating so much chocolate. So for a while, he like stopped buying chocolate altogether. And then I said one day, we never have any chocolate in the house anymore. And he said, yes, I realised that you wanted to be more healthy and so do I, so I stopped buying it. And I said, well, how about we just limit ourselves instead and we don't eat chocolate every night?
That's very mature, Kitty.
Why, thank you. Except don't call me mature, Steph. It makes me think of cheese. sorry. But no, we buy chocolate now, and we might buy one or two blocks, but they're usually when the kids are around, and we'll share it out on a weekend. And by sharing it with so many children, and you only actually ever get, it's very rare to get more than four chunks of chocolate in one go.
Beautiful. That's a really good strategy. And I tell you what, there has been billions and billions of dollars of research that has gone into finding what they call the sweet spot. Have you heard of that before?
I have.
Mm,
let's explain it to me.
Okay, well, it is the exact, I guess, quality of sweetness that when it hits your palate, it almost creates a moorish behaviour.
Oh, is this like we're trying to make things more addictive?
Addictive. Mm. Addictive. Billions of dollars worth of research has gone into that from the food manufacturing and food marketing companies. So the best thing you can do if you want to have chocolate is buy a chocolate that is high, high quality, perhaps really high in cocoa, or cocoa,
yeah.
and lower in sugar, and maybe with some of the sweeteners like stevia or agave that are more natural.
All right.
And they're less likely to form that addictive sort of cyclical chocolate.
Yeah, because if you're eating your standard, well, not standard, we were talking about like the really good stuff. If you're eating something like a creamy milk chocolate, it's really rich and you just crave more and more and more of it. Before you know it, you can eat the entire flipping block.
Yes.
Whereas I quite like dark chocolate.
Yes.
Which is, I think, what you're talking about.
You're exactly right. And the other thing I really enjoy if I'm feeling like chocolate is I will make a hot cacao with almond milk and a bit of maple syrup. And when you have a glass of that, that's all you need. You don't, you know, it's enough. And because it's so strong, it's got a lot, you know, and also cacao as opposed to cocoa, it's got lots of antioxidants, it's in its more natural state, so it's better for the body. So you don't crave, after a cup of that, you don't want any more.
That sounds great.
It's beautiful.
I also read that somewhere it said if you're craving sugar, try eating fruit instead. And I actually gave that a go. And I did notice that I ate a lot less rubbish. You know, every time I was hungry, I'd get an apple or a mandarin or a piece of fruit. And it's good for you on a lot of levels.
Yes.
Yeah, they're all those internal workings also like you a lot more for it too.
They do. And fruit obviously comes with its natural, it's got water in it, it's got fiber in it, it's got micronutrients in it. Mm. And so your body responds really beautifully to fruit. And as you say, it curbs those cravings. A lot of people go, oh gosh, I feel like chocolate, but I do not feel like a piece of fruit. But I think it's just over time, again, you know, it's not that all or nothing. It's like you're better off crowding out the food that you know is inflammatory, like sugar, in refined grains.
Or you could even, like, if you really, really want some chocolate, what I tried once was melting just a little bit in the microwave carefully, and then I'd chop up an apple or something and dip it in the chocolate.
I love that. Fondue.
It was so good. It was so good. And very healthy. Get me. I am such a paragon of virtue.
Yeah, I love it.
I know.
Well, we were talking about healthy aging, and there's quite a few things we can do. But I love it. No, we've covered quite a lot already. We've talked about muscle mass, exercise. Mm. We've talked about stretching and posture. A little bit about that. We've talked about sugar, micronutrients, and macronutrients. Well, micronutrients. We haven't talked about macronutrients, which is like protein, carbohydrates, fats. But we're covering a lot of ground already.
All right. So, do you want to talk about micronutrients?
Well, we talked about vegetables and fruit.
All right.
And that's really, that covers it. If we're having lots of vegetables and fruit, and particularly the body really craves a variety and quality vegetables in huge quantities.
So when I go to the supermarket, it's often like people often stick to the same veggies and things. What advice might you have for people who might want to mix it up? Or they go, well, that's great, Steph, but I only ever shop at my local supermarket and it's like cabbage, cauliflower, carrots. Maybe you might push the boat out and buy a leek.
Yeah. I understand the question. Do you know humans crave variety? It's an evolutionary drive. And the reason why is because we're seasonal creatures. And so when you look at our ancestors, and I don't mean, you know, our nanas, and our granddads. I mean, if you look back tens of thousands of years ago.
Are we going Neanderthal?
Yeah. Oh, wow. What if we go that far back? Mm. We were forced to eat a variety of food. Mm. And what would happen is we would land in a location, we would eat whatever was there. If there was a berry bush, we'd eat all the berries. We wouldn't stop at just two or three, would we? We would eat the whole lot. We would eat whatever greens were around. We would hunt on the land. And then when we had stripped land bear, our community would get up and we would relocate. And we would find a different source. And then the seasons would change and we would have different foods available.
Yeah, because it's true, isn't it, that they say that humans are designed. The reason why you get a bit hungry and then you'll go to the fridge and you just basically, I'm just going to have a slice of bread and butter, or maybe I'll have some celery and peanut butter, or I'll have whatever. And then you go and look in the fridge, and before you know it, you've eaten nearly everything in the fridge, and you're reaching for a packet of chips, and you're getting some biscuits, and, you know, or maybe you're good and you get an apple as well. But before you know it, you've eaten, like, so much food.
Yes.
And that is because we're programmed to do that, eh? Well, and breaking that is really, really hard.
Yeah, there's quite a few things going on there, Kitty, I would suggest. The first is, no, that's, I love it. I love the question. I think the first thing is that we are programmed to have variety. In fact, you know, it's true we have two stomachs. If we were to have a whole plate of broccoli, you know, I like steamed broccoli with eggs for breakfast. And people are like, oh my goodness, are you serious? You know, not every day. But I like to have, some days I'll have that for breakfast, or, you know, roasted cauliflower, roasted tomatoes, some mushrooms, a bit of bacon. So, you know.
I'm coming to your house.
Yeah, you're welcome. So sometimes you would have, and then if something sweet came across your path, you would find a second stomach for that sweet because the variety is really, really important. Because if we go back to that our evolutionary roots, what our body's trying to do is store as many micronutrients as possible because it's concerned there might be a fast or a famine.
And it's
coming.
Also going, oh, sugar, yeah, that's fats and stuff, and we can lay that down. And
absolutely. Yeah. So we are driven to seek out fat and sugar and store it. It's an evolutionary drive. Mm-hmm. So the reason why we go to the pantry and we seem to have this sort of bottomless pit is because if there's a whole lot of variety, we are craving that. And that's going back to your original question, you know, when we go to the supermarket, what if we just have carrots and pumpkin and potatoes as a standard? We're more likely to be driven to seek other foods like cheese scones and, you know, other foods that aren't necessarily as functional because we're not really creating variety in our breakfast, lunch and dinner.
Oh, that's really interesting. So the more variety that we have, the less we'll crave all the bad stuff.
Absolutely, and it goes one step further. The more variety we have from an emotional or social perspective, the less likely we're going to use food to satisfy our drive for variety.
Wow. Now that sounds like a deep conversation.
That's another 30 minutes, Kitty.
So, okay, so for people listening at home and they're thinking, oh, this all sounds great, Steph, but, you know, actually, I like my vegan potato soup, and I like sitting around and, like, just watching telly, and I don't think I can do any of this because it's all just too hard. Mm. What one thing can they do to improve, you know, their maybe their fitness or their health?
Yeah. Again, it's starting where you are. And it's about, and we say, you know, are we happy? Often we're comfortable, but are we happy? And I do believe also one of the primary reasons why we're driven to eat dysfunctional food, perhaps drink too much alcohol, is because we're seeking pleasure where we don't have joy and bliss.
Mm.
So if we can really look hard at the reasons why we eat what we eat or drink what we drink, see if we can put a pause between the trigger, the cue, the moment where we say, oh, I really want a drink, or I really want a muffin. Put a pause and see if we can figure out what feelings we're trying to access before we have the thing. And even if we have the thing, really analyze why we're doing what we're doing and then just start small.
I really like that because what I really like about you is that you're not about stopping having a treat every now and again. It's just about making sure it's not all the time and just slowly building.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for coming and talking to me, Steph.
It's been an absolute pleasure,
Katie. I've absolutely loved having you here. And a huge thanks to Cursed Access Radio. And if you want to find out more, you can find me on cursedaccessradio.co.nz or at kittyfitton.com. And thank you very much for coming. It's been awesome.
Thank you, Kitty. It's been a pleasure.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.